Hello, I'm Michael Lemon. This is number 0210, the Stuff Out program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0210. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Shanna Pearson, who is the founder and president of One Focus Total Success. She counsels people with ADHD. Why is there a gender gap when it comes to diagnosing ADHD?
There's a gender gap because boys show ADHD symptoms much more obviously than girls do. They tend to be a lot more hyperactive. They tend to be much more external in their symptoms. So it's just more obvious. Girls show it a lot differently. They're just a lot more inattentive, more daydreaming. It's just they're not as disruptive, and therefore it doesn't get seen quite as often.
Mary Rolfe Lamontagne is the author of the cookbook Eats, which teaches us how to be less wasteful with food.
The biggest thing was moving to South Africa and being taken out of my comfort zone and cooking where you get deliveries once a week and then you have to really be quite inventive. And coming back to North America for my summers and seeing how much we actually waste in this part of the world. And I cannot believe we end up throwing away 40% of all that stuff that we have spent so much time growing. So those are all sort of the things that have brought me to write this book, Eat.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge, and he has an opinion on everything, including New York's stop and frisk law.
New York City cops, because we trust them, all right? And if we didn't trust them, we'd fire them. But the ones we trust are allowed to go up on the street and say, "Hi, guys, how are you today? Could we please look in your knapsack?" Well, you know, normally that makes a civil liberties NYU left-wing liberal attorney go out of his mind because there's no probable cause and there's no reason and how dare they look into my knapsack and this and the other thing. But the upside of it is we don't have people running around with guns.
Plus, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0210 was Michael Lemon, who is a fan of the Stuff File program. Thank you very much, Michael, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. It's much appreciated. On a program that's also heard, by the way, on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, Gerald Thomas Navarre, age 36, of Iowa City, Iowa, has been arrested again. In 2011, he was charged with public intoxication and harassing passers-by at a mall. A few months later, he was arrested again, that time for allegedly throwing rocks at homeless people. This time, he allegedly pushed a disabled man off his mobility scooter, injuring him. As police arrested him, he screamed at the victim and witnesses. Navarro prefers to be known by a different name. He says he's a superhero whose job is to protect women, and he prefers to be known as Captain Save-A-Ho. Captain Save-A-Ho. Wow. I seem to have missed that superhero in my childhood comic book collection. Only a judge can approve a name change, and I think if the judge goes the way I think she's going to go, she's probably going to reduce his rank. He won't be Captain Save-A-Ho anymore. I think she's probably leaning towards something more like Private Rotten Jail. Yeah. Anyway, a server at a Reno, Nevada bar took a picture of a man with a $100 tab before he left without paying. The pub posted it to Facebook and it went viral. Saul Zelaznog, age 36, told a newspaper the Brewer's Cabinet was acting like I ran out of there and insisted I was going to be back to take care of my tab. But other establishments said he'd bailed on them too, and authorities concluded that he had gone into the bars in the first place with no cash and no intention to pay. So they charged Saul with 5 counts of burglary, on top of a probation violation on which he'd already been arrested. His prior record includes passing bad checks and conspiring to commit theft. He was being held on $100,000 bail, so since he can't pay his bar tab, I'm assuming he's not going anywhere too soon. Oh, the joys of new media. I mean, catching stupid people and cheats with ease. When a teacher fired a handgun during class in Fairfield County, Ohio, the bullet ricocheted off a desk and into student Michael Piamonte's right arm. The teacher, Terry J. Dunlop Sr., age 73, was trying to demonstrate the handgun. The class was on gun safety. The students were pursuing concealed carry licenses. Nurses taking the class assisted Piamonte, who was 26, on the scene, and he was taken to hospital but released the same day. No charges were filed against Dunlop, who is a Violet Township trustee and runs a shooting range. Piamonte said he guessed Dunlop didn't realize that the handgun was loaded. Well, hadn't the class covered the principle that all guns are to be presumed loaded? Yes. Anyway, we have a couple of people with issues, two of them. First up, Gerald Streeter, age 47, pleaded guilty in June in Waukesha, Wisconsin County Court to public lewdness and placed on probation after his arrest last year of going through the motions of intercourse with a discarded couch on a public street. An off-duty police officer thought initially that he had caught a couple, but on closer inspection he realized Streeter, who was aroused, was alone. And number two, the day before, in Östersund, Sweden, a 35-year-old man was arrested after a surveillance camera revealed him to be the one who repeatedly punctured Per Edstrom's bicycle tires and who that evening was seen sitting on the bicycle, let's say, enjoying the pleasure of his own company. Wow, you know, I look at a bicycle or a couch and all I see are a bicycle and a couch. That's it. Anyway, we have time for one more item in the Stuff File News, at least in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest. The Mars One project is a privately funded venture to colonize Mars. Multiple probes have been sent to the Red Planet, but no human has ever gone. Mars One intends to change that by 2022, with a catch. The trip for the two-man, two-woman crew, they say, will be one way. Anyone who volunteers has to do it knowing that they can't come back home ever. So apparently Thomas Wolfe was right. Anyway, far from having a dearth of volunteers, the project already has 100,000 who agree to the conditions. There is also a very large number of people who are still working on their profile. So either they have decided not to pay the application fee, or they are still making their video, or they're still filling out the questionnaire or their resume, says Mars One CEO Baz Lansdorp. 8 4-person crews will be launched if the project can secure full funding. Wow, 100,000 people at least are thinking of doing this. I don't know anybody who wants to go, but I can think of plenty of people I'd love to send. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Boys are diagnosed with ADHD 3 times more often than girls, but that doesn't mean that boys have ADHD more than girls. So why the gender gap? That's a question we have for Shanna Pearson, who professionally counsels people with ADHD. She joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Shanna.
Hello, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So why is there this gender gap?
There's a gender gap because boys show ADHD symptoms much more obviously than girls do. They tend to be a lot more hyperactive. They tend to be much more external in their symptoms. So it's just more obvious, and it's more visibly obvious for people. It creates a little bit more chaos for other people. So parents and teachers that are dealing with boys with ADHD it's just a lot more challenging for them.
Okay,
girls show it a lot differently. They're just a lot more inattentive, more daydreaming. It's just they're not as disruptive, and therefore it doesn't get seen quite as often.
Okay, well, let's talk about an overall of ADHD, because I remember when I was a kid, I remember all the kids that I was in, and I grew up in the baby boom generation where schools were filled to the rafters with kids.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about the people around me who were students and out of myself. I'm just wondering how many of us would have been diagnosed with ADHD, and would that have been the correct diagnosis?
That's a great question. It's really interesting because a lot of people, especially in the States, a lot of kids get diagnosed with ADHD who don't actually have ADHD. They're just hyper kids. And, you know, kids like to move and kids like to cause chaos and kids don't always want to sit still in a classroom. And so that does not mean that they're ADHD. So back in the day, and then when you were a kid, you didn't get diagnosed with ADHD because ADHD just wasn't as known back then. But the fact is that even today, you may actually have been diagnosed with ADHD even if you didn't and don't have it. Because now there's a huge overdiagnosis problem, in my opinion. A lot of people are being diagnosed with ADHD who don't actually have it just because they've eaten too much sugar in the morning or there's other things going on with them, and it's just easy to say, oh, you're ADHD, here's some Ritalin.
Okay, so now getting back to the gender gap situation, what do you want people, and I guess maybe it's educators, parents, what do you want them to know in order to get the proper diagnosis for girls who aren't getting it?
What do I want the educators to know?
Educators or parents?
Well, I want them to know that number one, ADHD is actually a very real challenge for the people who do have it. And not to just label these kids as problem kids, because they're not. A lot of them are, you know, above average intelligence. They just have a different way that they need to learn things. I would also like for them to know about specifically the girls. If you notice, because it's not as noticeable for females, but it is as challenging for them. So if there's a girl in your life, whether, you know, you're a teacher or a parent who just always, you know, often seems lost in their head, doesn't really ever, you know, always seems to need things repeated two or three times because they just don't quite get it the first time. If they're, you know, they tend to get overwhelmed by emotion often, those are some of the main symptoms that you want to look out for when it comes to girls, for sure. And if you have a girl like that in your life, it would probably be a great idea to take her, you know, for a true diagnosis from a psychologist or a psychiatrist and find out if this is what's going on, because there's definitely things that you can do to help her.
Now, as you said earlier, there are some people who are overly diagnosed with ADHD, and I'm assuming that there's the other side of that coin as well, that there are people who are going unnoticed with ADHD.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where the gender gap comes in. That's really a lot more females get unnoticed more than males. For males, it's more of an overdiagnosis problem, and for females, it's the opposite.
And whether it's male or female, ADHD is not necessarily something one grows out of, correct? I mean, there are adults with it.
No, not at all. You're born with it. You have it for life. And the truth is that it can be a huge blessing in a way. When you know how to manage it, the way that the ADHD brain works, if you can make it work for you, I believe that you can be unstoppable, because people with ADHD, you really do have a lot more energy than most, even, you know, for the female population. You're able to do so many different kinds of things, and you're not ever just stuck in one, you know, on one road. You're able to see a lot more opportunities. And when you know how to harness the power of ADHD, the world is your oyster.
Now, I understand you also work with adults, correct?
Yeah, we only work with adults. I actually have a coaching company that we have almost 20 coaches on my team, and we work with adults age 18 and up. Probably our oldest client is 76, and you know, it's adults and all across, you know, across the spectrum. We have college students, university students, entrepreneurs, professionals, teachers, stay-at-home moms, everything and anything in between.
And when you're working with these adults, are these people who have always known they were ADHD, or was it a discovery for them?
It's interesting because a lot of the people who call us that are age, you know, 35 and over, just recently found out that they have ADHD. Either, you know, their child was just diagnosed and they recognize the symptoms. They're like looking at their kid going, oh my goodness, this is, you know, this is me. when really, you know, their child just found out that they are ADHD and they're realizing, well, this is where it comes from. Sometimes it's, you know, it causes chaos in marriages, and so people would go for couples counseling, and then it turns out that one of the partners might, you know, have ADHD, and it takes, you know, a therapist or a psychologist to notice that. Most of the adults we work with have recently found out in the last 3 years or so.
And when an adult is diagnosed and they get that diagnosis, is it like a light bulb going off for them? It's like an aha moment to their past?
Yeah, for most of them, yes. For most of them, it's like this huge relief or this big, you know, wow, now I understand how my life has been working and why it's been working like this and why I've been like this my whole life. It's really amazing when you actually can, you know, put a label to it and just know what's going on. But at the end of the day, it's really, you know, once you know what's going on, that's one area. But then the other area is like, well, now what am I going to do about it? And so obviously, you know, that's where our coaching comes in. That's where, you know, that's where you can start to help yourself and deal with your symptoms. Whatever label you want to put on them, it's really about, you know, what are you going to do about it now?
And like we were saying earlier with the gender gap that's being misdiagnosed in girls versus boys when they're younger, are you finding that it's women, adults, who are discovering more and more that it's something they have and have always had and didn't know they had?
Actually, no. It's pretty much equal between men and women finding out. Just as many men would call us that say, you know, oh, my son was just diagnosed or my daughter was just diagnosed, and I'm realizing that this is actually me, you know, and now I need help. I'm a little bit more surprised because nobody ever mentioned anything to them before, or, you know, a lot of adults, especially age, you know, 30 and up, think that ADHD is really just about, you know, hyperactivity. And so that's what people, you know, believe that it is. And so when you're inattentive, and, you know, that would be the person who is not hyperactive, but just really lost in their head a lot of the time and just caught up in basically in the spirals going on in their head of too many thoughts and too many things and stuck in overwhelm and emotion, almost like you're frozen and you can't do anything or you procrastinate. And it's almost like it's very difficult for you to move forward because you just don't know where to start. So that's a whole, it's like mental chaos versus physical chaos.
Fascinating stuff. And we should mention again, you're the founder and president of One Focus Total Success Incorporated, and you have a website, right?
Yeah, the website is onefocustotalsuccess.com. And anybody who goes to that website, you can sign up and have a free coaching session. And even, you know, whether you go forward or not, at least you'll be able to, you know, get some tips and techniques that can help you right now.
Fascinating stuff. I thank you very, very much, Shanna, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure, Peter. Thanks for speaking with me, too. It's been great.
Shanna Pearson, founder and president of One Focus Total Success Incorporated. You can go to my website at thestuffall.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0210. And you'll find links to Shanna's site.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey. Your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Eats, about how we waste a lot of food here in the West. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, we have a lot more Stuff File news and an idiot of the day on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And speaking of Stuff File news, a lot more of it right here, right now. And this next story is a really odd one from Australia. And, you know, if I say that a story is really odd, it really has to be out there, considering a lot of the stuff we normally talk about on this show. It's really out there, trust me, this one is. It seems a man had to go to the hospital to have a 4-inch fork removed from his penis after it became lodged there during a sex act. Apparently, he was trying to achieve sexual climax, although how a cocktail fork was supposed to help with that was not made clear. The incident was described in a recent medical journal by three surgeons who operated on the man to remove the kitchen utensil. They eventually managed to retrieve the object after using a large amount of lubrication and forceps while the man was given a general anesthesia. Oh, I hope it was a general anesthetic. I really do. I mean, I wouldn't want to be awake for that. Then again, I wouldn't shove a fork in my nether regions for kicks either, so who knows what this guy would have liked. I love this quote, by the way, from the International Journal of Surgery Case Reports. Here is the quote. It is apparent that the human mind is uninhibited, let alone creative. Wow. Yeah, don't say, huh? And now the kicker to this whole bizarre incident is that the victim, for lack of a better descriptor, is 70 years old. Now, do you think at that age what a person does for kicks is on an escalating scale or de-escalating scale? Because if it's on a de-escalating scale, I hate to see what he was doing when he was like 20. Anyway, while we're still on some strange sexual kicks, we go to Oklahoma for our next story. Troy Riddling has confessed to stealing a computer from a church back in July. It took him 2.5 weeks to get there. Police say an employee of the Owasso First Assembly of God called officers about a stolen computer. He tipped off officers that it had to be somebody familiar with the church because there were no signs of a break-in and nothing else was touched. It turned out he was right, because our buddy Troy used to attend services there. Still, Owasso, Oklahoma police didn't get a break into the case until the church employee was contacted by a tracking software company. Covenant Eyes told the employee somebody had been trying to look up pornography on the computer. Police said Troy even contacted Covenant Eyes to try to get them to take down the monitoring software on the computer. He was denied, and the call allowed officers to track him down. Once in custody, Troy tried to deny stealing the computer, despite officers finding the device at his home. Police say he finally did confess to the theft. You know, this guy came dangerously close to the idiot of the day. Do you think the church will forgive him? You know, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. Anyway, the upscale restaurant at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art announced in August that it would soon add a 20-item selection of waters from around the world, priced from $8 to $16 a bottle, except for a $12 tasting menu. Martin Rees, the general manager of Ray's and Stark Bar, who is also a renowned water gourmet. Yeah, how do you become a renowned water gourmet? And are there a lot of them to compare him to? It's like saying somebody is Ecuador's finest playwright. Name a second one. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. Yes, this guy who was our friend Martin, who was a renowned water gourmet, will sell his own California-made 90H2O. Oh, that's cute. Which comes in limited editions of 10,000 individually numbered glass bottles at $14 a pop. Said Reese, many people don't know that water is just as important to the entire dining experience as, say, a good wine. Wow, he must have some really bad wine. Reese has been certified as a water sommelier by the German Mineral Water Association. Wow. I just have one point to make. Folks, it's water. I mean, really, it's water. Our planet, 3/4 of it, water. Get over it. Anyway, a security lab delivering a report to the makers of software for a luxury Japanese toilet warned that a flaw in their Android program renders the toilet hackable, even while a user sits on it. The Satis, which retails for the equivalent of about $5,600, includes automatic flushing, bidet spray, fragrance spritzing, and music, according to an August BBC News report, and is controlled by My Satis cell phone app. However, the PIN to operate the app is unalterably 0000, which means that a prankster with an app could create some very uncomfortable mischief in a public restroom. Of all the things that someone decides they want to hack, they would choose to hack a toilet? Boy, that's really aiming for the bottom, isn't it? In more ways than one. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the CEO of Christian Schools Australia told the Australian Associated Press in June that the Caloundra Christian College in Queensland teaches a range of creative sexual health messages and offered the school's recent student pamphlet, 101 Things to Do Instead of Doing It, as evidence. Recommended substitutes? Pretend you're six again. Have a water fight. Blow bubbles in the park, and have a burping contest. Seriously? I mean, these are the things that teenage boys would do to not think about sex? Yeah, that's going to work. I mean, for starters, water fights lead to wet t-shirts, and then all bets are off. All bets are off. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Mary Rolfe Lamontagne is a Canadian living in South Africa who trained at a cooking school in Paris. She now works in Southern African game lodges, reinventing menus and training staff. That background is all part of her new cookbook entitled Eats. And Mary joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Oh, just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Looking through the information about the book, it seems that you have found a way to, I guess, liven up cuisine by using food that in some cases often gets thrown away.
40% of all our food, fruits and vegetables, end up in a garbage bin. So I decided that it was time to make a difference and try and figure out ways to treat them as ingredients rather than as throwaway stuff.
What is the greatest influence in this book for you, or in your past, rather, that is in this book? Is it the cooking schools you went to, or the fact that you work in South African game lodges? Are these all the things that are brought together to make this book?
I think all of those have played an influence, and I think the biggest thing was moving to South Africa and being taken out of my comfort zone and cooking where you get deliveries once a week, and then you have to really be quite inventive. And coming back to North America for my summers and seeing how much we actually waste in this part of the world. And so it started to grow on me. And then the fact that I have a garden now in South Africa where I grow my own fruits and vegetables, it made me realize that it's really hard to grow these fruits and vegetables. And I cannot believe we end up throwing away 40% of all that stuff that we have spent so much time growing. So those are all sort of the things that have brought me to write this book, Eats.
Now, you say that you worked in South Africa, then you'd come back home on vacations and you'd see how much food we threw away. Were you aware of this at all, or very blasé about it before you went away? In other words, was it being in South Africa and then coming home and going, oh my gosh, we're throwing this stuff away?
Absolutely. And it's funny, when you're in it, you don't even realize you're in it, right? You just go with the flow and you do like everyone else, and you don't even realize it. And I started to realize when I come back from being in South Africa, the first 2 weeks, there's such amazing marketing here and publicity and promotions that you kind of get sucked up. And the first 2 weeks, I'm a bit shaking in my boots, and I'm sort of going, oh my gosh, I'm getting hit from all angles, and look at all this waste. And then you sort of calm down and become part of it. And thank God I created this book, Eats, Enjoy All the Seconds, because I've now said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to join the crowds. I am going to make a difference. I am going to save my stuff. When I go to friends' houses now, I bring a little composting bag with me, and they all laugh at me. But I'm just really trying to stick to what I believe in, and I hope that everyone else will start doing the same thing. And it's not to be preachy or whatever. It's just... It's what has become the norm for me. So,
why do we throw away so much food? What's the main cause or reason?
I think the biggest thing is we're always in such a rush. Everything's really busy, and we have so much stuff going on. And food preparation, everything is done in grocery stores now, right? So it's convenience. So why cook at home when you have it in a grocery store? And sure, you pay a little bit more, but why not? But then you have this other side where there are the farmers markets and there's all these beautiful food that's not prepared. So I think you get sort of stuck between the two because you're not used to cooking anymore. But then you're at the farmers market because it's a trendy thing to do, and it's good for your body and it's good for your soul. And so you go out and you buy all the stuff, and then you end up sort of thinking, okay, I have dinner out tonight and the kids are doing this, we'll just throw in a pizza. And we forget that we have all the stuff in the fridge until we look in and, oh my gosh, the carrots are shriveled, the berries are starting to grow little mold, and then they end up in the bin. So
I think that's
a big problem.
Is part of the problem that we buy too much? And I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I hate to say it, yesterday I threw out potatoes, and I tend to do that more often than I care to admit.
And you know what? Potatoes, actually, when they start rooting, they're not good for you to eat. And them away in a drawer somewhere and in the darkened place, and we kind of forget about them. So potatoes and sweet potatoes, those are things that really do go bad on us or start rooting. You could always plant that and create a potato plant. You okay. Do know that, right? You
okay, now
find a way
Now you're scaring me because you just said that potatoes that start to root are not good to eat, and I've just cut off the roots. The ones I throw away are the ones that start leaking.
Okay. You're still alive, so you're fine. But they actually say it's not a brilliant thing to eat, to just cut off the roots. I used to do it all the time, and then I was informed that that was not the healthiest thing to do. So I try not to do that anymore. But you can actually just put those in a little soil and keep watering, and they start to grow little green leaves, and the potato plant starts to grow. So it's sort of fun with your family and friends. Go, look, this didn't go in the waste. It's now a plant. Now I can plant it and get potatoes out of it.
Okay, so tell us some of the things that people will find in your book, Eats. What are the biggest tips and ideas that you're trying to get across?
So it's fruits and vegetables, but it's not a vegetarian cookbook. It's just fruits and vegetables being brought up as the main rather than the side dish. And it's a master recipe, so it's either sautéed, braised, steamed, roasted. And then that recipe of, say, for example, a braised carrot, braised maple ginger carrots, can then be reinvented into a carrot cake with a cream cheese filling on the inside, or carrot hummus or carrot fritters. So I'm not a lover of leftovers, and that's why I came up with this concept, because I really felt that we had to use up the stuff in our fridge. And so I started thinking of recipes that could be made from the basic that's in the fridge that we made up for, like the roast carrots with our roast chicken and mashed potatoes, the first meal, and then the extra carrots left. And you always look at those extra carrots and go, do I keep them or do I throw them out? And why not keep them and then make a cake with them or fritters or hummus? And so that's the whole principle of the book, is a master recipe reinvented into four or five other recipes.
Oh, so it's not just simple leftovers. It's basically repurposing that food.
Repurposing the food. I like that. I'm going to use that. Yes, completely. Because I don't like to eat the same thing 3 days in a row. But I really do like to use up what's in my fridge. And so that's how I came up with this concept.
So what is the how long has the book been out, and what is the reaction to the book so far?
You know, it's funny. It's a very colorful book, and so your fruits and vegetables are all by color, because I'm art history major and I love art and visual stuff. So I did that by color. And people have really reacted well to the cover, and then open the book and they love the pictures. So every recipe has a picture, which is great. I like to see what my food is going to look like. So every picture is there, and the recipes are easy, and people have loved it. I've had emails from people. I've had phone calls. People I don't even know have come up to me and at events and stuff, and they've bought my book, and they come up to me and go, I can't believe how amazing this is. My child and I have been cooking, and we've done this and that. And that's the whole principle behind this book, is to get cooking with family, with friends, make a difference, and have fun, while also making a difference for the environment. And that's my whole premise. And save money going along. So there's so many different aspects that made me really write this book. And people are getting it, which is really exciting for me.
You mentioned you live in South Africa now. Our wasteful food ideas here in North America. When you talk to people in South Africa about how we waste food, what's their reaction?
You know, they're different depending on who I'm talking to. Some people don't waste any food because they just don't have the money to waste the food, so they don't understand it. But there are some people that you know, we have Woolies and we have a number of large grocery chains that are starting to do the same thing as we have in this country, and they have prepared food and people don't cook as much. There is still a growing sort of middle class that's doing that as well, they are understanding that there is a need there as well to deal with waste and leftovers, because it's happening everywhere. Not as much as here in North America, but South Africa is beginning to have the same problems as North America.
Well, I guess you're changing people's minds, one reader at a time, I guess.
Absolutely. One fruit or one vegetable at a time.
The book is called Eats, and I should mention the subtitle, Enjoy All the Seconds. It's written by Mary Roth Lamontagne. And I thank you very much, Mary, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about my book, so thank you.
Mary Roth Lamontagne, author of Eats, Enjoy All the Seconds. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0210, and you'll find the links to Mary's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. After we announce the winners of our wacky warning label contest each year, we get calls from reporters around the world. They all ask the same thing. Why are there so many common sense warnings on products sold in America? Well, the answer is that anyone who sells a product here knows that they can be sued over almost anything. So many warnings are meant to prevent frivolous lawsuits. Like when a guy who was playing basketball caught his teeth in the net while dunking the ball and sued the net makers. He got $50,000. In another case, a tool maker was sued by a man who used one of their wood routers to try to fix his own teeth. The company eventually put a label on the tool warning that it's not intended to be used as a dental drill. Now, let's be fair, these warnings can be hilarious, but the fact that product makers have to put them there because they're facing so many abusive lawsuits is really no laughing matter. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the
The Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, on the streets of New York is indeed Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, and he's back with us again. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the very warm streets of New York.
Now, you haven't been stopped and frisked lately, have you?
No, and I got to tell you something. I don't want to get too dramatic about it, and I don't care if anybody wants to stop and frisk with me. And let me explain this to your nice listeners. New York City has the lowest crime rate of any city in the United States. It's impossible to have a gun in New York City. It's called the Sullivan Act. We haven't had a gun in New York City, except for some bad people, since 1918. Okay, it's a mandatory 3-year jail sentence just for owning a gun. So we are very anti-gun, and while the rest of the United States is going nuts fighting about gun control, we're not fighting about it. But here's the deal. New York City cops, because we trust them, all right, and if we didn't trust them, we'd fire them. But the ones we trust are allowed to go up on the street, the Peter and Miss Peter, two Peters, and say, hi, guys, how are you today? Could we please look in your knapsacks? Well, you know, normally that makes a civil liberties NYU left-wing liberal attorney go out of his mind, because there's no probable cause and there's no reason, and how dare they look into my knapsack and this and the other thing. You know, that's an argument. But the upside of it is, we don't have people running around with guns. Now, when our country was formed, the idea was that we were going to have a legislature. This was Thomas Jefferson's idea. And what would happen is the people would decide what laws they want and what laws they don't want. New York City wants this law, except for some malcontents who want to blame it on they're picking on blacks, or they're picking on Latinos, or they're picking on who knows what, which is not true. And if it was true, I'd be the first to tell you. The citizens of New York wanted this law. Now, along comes a federal judge. What a dope. Can you say that on the radio? Dope for a federal judge? Oh, well, I said it. Okay, she wasn't elected to anything. She's a political hack that was appointed to her job. And she comes along and she now rules that stop and frisk is unconstitutional, blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing. So you got a lot of different arguments going on here, because, of course, you could argue, should people be doing stop and frisk? You could argue, is it the right of a judge to stick a nose into a situation that you shouldn't? So it makes for good arguments, and that's what we're all fighting about. However, Peter, because I'm your chief correspondent in New York, I shall present to you a sidebar, as they say in the business, of what's going on also. Up to this point, everybody and his brother is not running around with a gun in New York City. But wait a minute. Now if the bad guys are going to be able to have guns, maybe the good guys should have guns. And I know for a fact, cab drivers, messengers, delivery people, who knows, even maybe your friendly UPS and FedEx man are thinking, maybe I better get a gun if everybody else is going to have a gun. So this judge has really set off a firestorm. And if she didn't hear me say it the first time, I'll say it again. She's a jerk.
Okay, don't hold back. Meanwhile, speaking
of... I try to say it without taking a breath.
Absolutely.
That's what I understand. So you're nice listeners, people that say, I don't like a gun. Listen, if somebody tells me to put on a tie and a sport jacket, I don't want to hear that, because I'm independent and free. But sometimes you have to make concessions when you have a serious crime problem. And right now, the United States of America, my country that I love, is going down the toilet with crime. It's just unbelievable.
So there is frisking, and then there is frisking. What is this story about a Brooklyn couple who are suing the city because of a strip search?
Well, see, that's the classic example. Sure, the cop should be fired. If I was commissioner, he'd be on his way to Cheyenne, Wyoming. I mean, there were two cases, actually. One where a couple gave a cop a hard time because they brought their dog onto the subway. And so to retaliate, must have had a fight with his wife in the morning, took them back to the station house and had a lady cop frisk the lady and a man cop frisk the man. He did that just to be mean. I mean, that's not the kind of charge that warrants. I mean, that's like when you get pulled over by a state trooper or a Mountie. I don't think the matter, of course, is to strip search you. if they're giving you a parking ticket. Or who knows, maybe Mounties do that. But so, I mean, that was ridiculous. So that was one thing. Another terrible case, cops barge into this man's house in the middle of the night, presumably to arrest this kid, who presumably has stolen a cellular phone. The father gets so excited and upset, drops dead of a heart attack. And, of course, it turned out that the kid had nothing to do with anything, and they had just barged into the wrong apartment. So there, you got two classic cases of cop abuse. Fine, fire them, get rid of them. Don't have them on the police force. But that doesn't mean you set out a whole foundation of law and order.
Okay, so one more cop story. I understand there was a story about a cop posing as a hooker.
Oh, big deal, big deal. You know, you know what her job was? To stand on the street. They call her alluring. I've never seen a New York City lady cop who's alluring, but that's another story. You know, where did that come from? And she stands on the street in front of a nightclub saying to people, do you want to go to bed with me? Now, that's a little tough for many men to resist, you know? Now, let me very quickly point out that if she had said that to me, I would have said, I don't care how alluring you are. I love and am faithful to my wife. But a lot of guys might not say that. So I don't think it's a big deal that in one night she managed to arrest 10 people. You know, they're making it sound like it's a world's record. Wow, 10 people. I'm sure almost every single guy she asked probably said yes. And were they surprised when they got let off in handcuffs? Mm.
Okay, I lied. One more cop story. I understand.
Keep going, baby. We're on a roll.
I understand there's an NYPD officer who committed a bicycle traffic violation. What is it?
Oh, I have a picture on my website. I mean, I love taking pictures of cops who do bad things. The big cardinal rule, as you could imagine in New York City, is don't ever ride your bicycle on the sidewalk, you know, unless you're 4 feet tall, you know, or 3 feet tall, you know, a kid. You can't ride your bicycle on our sidewalks. It's very dangerous. And everybody really kind of sticks to that, except for the crazy messenger boys. So anyway, I have a picture on the website that shows a cop riding his bicycle, because they do patrol on bicycles, on the sidewalk, and on either side of him is a cop, and they're just walking down the street schmoozing a little bit. So I published the picture and sent the copy to the commissioner, because I'm a troublemaker.
Hmm. First Edward Snowden, now you.
That's right. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the love affair, or apparently lack thereof, between the former occupants of the White House and the New York Times.
Okay, the New York Times makes the CBC look like it's a right-wing fascist organization, okay? The New York Times is so... Am I allowed to knock the CBC?
Oh, sure, go ahead. It's only our tax dollars.
I just did. I just did. They're about as left-wing liberal as you can get, okay? So is the New York Times. So is the Washington Post. So is NPR. So is PBS. I don't mind what their political view is. I mind that they always give one-sided news. Well, the Times has always said that the Clintons walk on water. I mean, just walk on water. So here's the astounding thing that happened this past week. They have some kind of charity foundation where millions and millions of dollars are floating through it, where supposedly they're supposed to be doing good stuff. So now the New York Times comes along, and then when they're the big blockbuster articles, starts to examine how the funds are going in and out, and they make the point that the Clintons spent $20 million on air transportation. Now, you know, you and I, when we go on a plane, we generally have another 300 people sitting next to us. You and I very rarely go on a 747 by ourselves. But that's what it seems the Clintons are doing. So it's not the amazing thing that two savvy politicians got their fingers in the cookie jar. What's amazing, and that has everybody talking, is that the New York Times is doing it. And that's the amazing thing. And now they've kind of realized what they've done, and they're trying to back off a little bit, because all the conservative talk show hosts have jumped on it. They're trying to back off on it a little bit by saying, well, I mean, it's just an examination. It doesn't necessarily, you know, include, you know, what's going on, and maybe the Clintons didn't know. Let me ask you a question, Peter. You don't mind if I call you Peter?
No problem.
If you had an organization and $20 million was missing, do you think you'd notice it?
I think I would, yes.
You could probably tell me how much money you have in your pocket right now.
Oh, because there's none.
Right. So, you know, to now turn around and say the Clintons didn't realize it. We're not talking about 20 bucks here. We're talking about 20 million. So anyway, it's great fun to see for a change a breaking in the ranks on anybody. Listen, I would love to see Fox attack the Bush dynasty, but they're not going to do it.
Well, before we let you go, sir, I understand there was a celebrity sighting. You saw someone playing volleyball?
Yes, and I stayed there as she jumped up and down and up and down and up and down. And that's what I want everybody to do. Look at my website. It's a picture of Cameron Diaz. And you guys, just think of her jumping up and down and up and down. No, she was playing volleyball in Central Park. And another, it was one of those great sightings that I looked around and nobody on the face of the earth knew who she was other than me, because these people are all dressed normally and I have a good eye for it. And also I'm always looking for them so I can talk to you about it.
Excellent. Well, it's always a pleasure to hear what you have to say, sir, about celebrities and politics and the goings-on of New York City. People can find out more information by going to your website at gabby.com. They can send you an email to peter@gabby.com. And I thank you very much for being on the program once again.
Well, thank you, and everybody go have a great day.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I have a couple of Stuff File news stories to get to before we get to our idiot of the day. So let's get right to them, shall we? New Hampshire police said a woman who has called 911 multiple times in the past month was arrested for calling the emergency number to ask for a pen. Police say Jeannie Dufresne of Hooksett, who has called the emergency number 10 times in the past month, called 911 during the weekend to request a writing instrument. "I just want a simple thing," Dufresne told the dispatcher, "a pen." "You want a pen?" the dispatcher said. "You dialed 911 because you want a pen? Do you realize that it's definitely not an emergency? You're dialing 911. You are tying up the 911 line, so you're tying up people who actually have emergencies because you need a pen?" Dufresne, whose age was not reported, was arrested on the misuse of 911. She was ordered held in lieu of a $5,000 bond. Police did not reveal the reasons for Dufresne's previous 911 calls. "I was thinking of sending her a box of Bic pens when she gets out, but then I realized that would probably just lead to her calling 911 asking for paper." Yes. And authorities in Florida said an alleged copper thief was arrested after asking scrapyard workers if selling stolen metal was a misdemeanor or a felony. The Volusia County Sheriff's Office said deputies tracked down Raymond Clifton, age 31, of De Leon Springs, after workers at a scrap yard reported that he had asked about whether stealing and selling copper was a misdemeanor or felony offense. Workers at the scrap yard thought it odd when Clifton mentioned a recent news story about someone who had been arrested for selling stolen copper and then asked if the crime was a misdemeanor or felony offense, according to Sheriff spokesperson Brandon Hout. Investigators said Clifton allegedly sold large amounts of copper on 17 occasions beginning in June and netted about $5,300. Clifton's employer, an electrical business, was contacted by deputies and carried out internal probes to determine that 1,911 pounds of copper was, wait for it, missing. Yes, Clifton was arrested on a charge of dealing in stolen property and jailed in lieu of a $10,000 bond. "Hey, Clifton, you went to ask a scrapyard and their workers about the crime of selling stolen copper? Seriously, I have one word for you, pal. Google. I mean, come on. I could have easily made this guy the idiot of the day, and he came so close to being that person, but I did not. Why? Because this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
There's going to be the odd time when police can't help you. Like, say, when you call them to ask how to protect the $6,000 in marijuana plants you've got growing in your house. Police said a woman called on Wednesday seeking tips on how to prevent someone from breaking into her home and stealing her pot plants. She didn't want to get violently robbed, according to Sergeant Terry Cox. It was an odd request, Cox said, and the officer on the other end of the line reminded the woman that she was talking to a police officer on a recorded line. The officer she spoke to actually cautioned her. Nonetheless, the woman proceeded with her inquiry. The officer jotted down the information, and the Drug Enforcement Unit paid a visit to her home Friday morning. Dolly Russell, age 46, was charged with production of marijuana and possession of marijuana. She is to appear in court on September 29th. The plants were seized by police. Well, now she doesn't have to worry about being robbed, huh? So, I gotta ask, why would someone call the police to ask about protection of their pot plants, and then, when they're warned by the authorities that she is being actually recorded on the line, continue to babble on about her cannabis collection? Well, there's one reason, and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0210. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0210. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air online. Liner as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing the show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.